Dateline, January 2023. For your approval, a new podcast draws near. What? Yes? Hello. Welcome to This Month in Retronauts, our tentatively titled monthly community podcast. Woo!
This is very exciting.
Hey! Oh, hello. I'm not alone this week. Who's with me this week?
Oh, hello. This month. I'm Stuart Jipp, the funny British man, clown, the Retronauts mascot.
You are a valued member of our hosting team, Stu. And for those of you new to the show, everyone, because this is the first episode we're doing, my name is Diamond Fight, and in place of my usual weekly column, we are trying out something a little different. I've been angling for this for a while. I wanted to do a community show, and so here it is. And if you like it, we will keep doing it. And if you don't like it, well, it'll peter out slowly.
Well, I just want to say at this point, what I feel about the Retronauts community is we want to put the you in community. You, because you are our community. So what we've got is a community, and we want to put a you in community.
Yes.
I think community sounds like it should be a real word, but it's not. Like, what I did, that was a flagrant display of comity I just experienced there. It's like when I found out about, what's it called, calumny. This is calumny, blatant calumny.
Oh, snap. I've heard that word before, yeah. But I've forgotten what it means.
I think it's just like lies, like deceit, just like obvious bullshit. I think that it's a word I try to work. When I heard it, I was like, well, that's going in my vocabulary.
Well, then, Stu, you wouldn't be feeding me a load of calumny about calumny, would you?
calumny about calumny. Well, I suppose it's possible. Ooh. But that might cause the world to, and like, you know, fall into a void from sheer, like, bants.
Anyway, Stu, because this is going to be our community podcast, I'm hoping to have a fun, casual feel. So I want to open this up with, the old standard of gaming podcasts. But we don't really do it on Retronauts because our shows are so carefully, to the last letter,
yep,
scripted and planned months in advance.
Oh, so yeah, every word is scripted. We're all reading from scripts the whole time.
It's like pro wrestling. It's the most intricate ballet in the universe.
Whoops, you just broke Retronauts kayfabe.
But because this episode is going up in a couple days, and we're shooting for a monthly, you know, what's going on this month, literally the month of January 2023, I want to know what video games, especially older games or related, have you been playing?
Who, me? Stu? Well, to be honest with you, I've been quite limited in my playing recently because I've not been in the headspace for playing video games, really. I'll try and play them and I just can't, like, focus. And I've been trying... But the one game that hasn't managed to engage me, that I've been playing every evening for about a week now on my Steam Deck, is... And this is the most Stuart Jipp thing ever, is Donkey Kong 64.
Really?
Yes, I've been playing it on the Emmy Deck, on the Steam Deck. And it's a game that I've always thought was a bit too maligned. Like, I think it's actually better than its reputation has. There's a reason for that, which is that I think it's a game that actually has a sense of mystery about it. Like, you want to know what everything does and where everything kind of is going to lead. But it is a very formulaic, like, switch to this character, do this, switch to this character, do that. But I think it still gets a bad reputation, considering it is all built around doing that. So it doesn't register to me as like a pain. It's just like, oh, that's what you've got to do because that's how it was designed. I really like it. I've been thinking about doing a podcast about it, but I think it might have been done already. But I like the idea of having a full episode about like the rare collectathon kind of things, you know.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't that the game that H Bomber Guy famously streamed? Like,
yes.
For like days on end,
yeah,
and like for charity.
It's that's because it is that arduous to 100%. It's absolutely absurd task, I suppose. I think a lot of the condemnation the game gets is because of that. But I guess my counter to that is just don't do it. Don't get 100%, and you'll probably have a fun enough time. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff worth seeing and worth doing in there. Though it is dated with the camera and the controls and that, obviously. N64 is one of my like pet consoles, so, you know. And it runs really nicely on the deck, which is great, because having N64 on a handheld is awesome. I mean, obviously the Switch has its small selection of games, but, I mean, there's no Mystical Ninja starring Goemon in there, is there? You know?
I don't think so. Mm. But at this point, I can't keep up with Goemon's comings and goings. He's just
He's a ninja. More goings these days, I think, sadly. Although with all of those fan translations, it's a bit of a good time to be a Goemon fan.
So DK64.
Yes. We went from DK64. I can see the through line with H1Guy and trans rights, and getting Donkey Kong to say trans rights on the stream, which was one of the greatest moments of the last few years for me. I was like adrenaline high the whole time. I was so happy when that was going on. It was beautiful.
I remember watching for several hours. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, there you go. If you make that episode happen, you should definitely, you know, go around to the pub or whatever and see if you can get H Bomber Guy on the show.
Yeah, I'll go down the pub, the one pub in the UK where we all hang out.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can get Harris. Yeah.
The Pigeon's Fin. That's
the Pigeon's Fin.
Yeah.
The Pigeon's Fin is all right. It's a Green King, so we'd rather go to the Freehouse, which, you know. I haven't got a funny name. I can't think of a funny pub name, though.
I don't think I did either.
I thought the Pigeon's Wing was quite good, to be honest.
Okay.
The Queen's Corpse.
Oh, no. Is it too soon? It's never too soon.
It wasn't too soon 1 second after she cocked it, to be honest. If you're not a monarchist.
As for me, I've actually been playing a lot of games lately. Here and there, not too far in any of them, but relevant stuff. Because it came up on This Week in Retro, I dipped into DMC Devil May Cry.
Oh, boy.
I didn't get very far because I had a lot of work to do, but boy, I had fun with that. I want to play more of that.
Problematic fave for me. There's a lot of stuff that is questionable in both the game itself and some of the marketing or some of the production of the game. There was this, but I love that game. I really love it.
Yeah, I think as soon as I got it on Steam, Steam bumped your review of it up to the top. It's like, oh, one of your friend reviewed this game. It's like, oh, well, there you go. I'm not surprised at all. Let's do
Oh man, I didn't. I don't remember doing that, but cool.
Yeah,
I guess I just did. I remember having a curator for 5 seconds.
So I had a lot of fun with that, and I definitely want to go back to that. I also played a little indie game, but definitely retro flavored game called Franken.
Dr. Franken.
And it's, what's that?
The Game Boy game Dr. Franken by Elite. One of my favorites as a kid. I assume it's nothing to do with that.
No, I don't think the Franken is not a doctor in this one. At least I don't think so.
That sucks. They shouldn't use that name without it being related to the original Dr. Franken in some way, in my opinion. But go on.
I think I played it in about an hour. It's kind of a JRPG style game.
Oh wow.
But it's jovial, it's funny. You can die, you can lose, but then you just come right back and keep going.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of characters to meet and there are battles to win, and there's a very specific order you need to go around the world to finish the game. But I had a lot of fun playing that game, and apparently it came out sometime last year, so it's relatively recent, but of course it looks like a game that came out in 2002, 2003.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of very simple graphics.
Yeah. Is it RPG maker sort of thing? Or?
Probably. Yeah. It definitely seemed like a lot of simple toolkits. I mean, if you look at it, I think you might compare it to Undertale. It has some Undertale flavor to it, but it's not a game like Undertale, but
right.
I think if you look at it and make a snap judgment, be like, oh, it's Undertale. It's not Undertale, but it's got a whiff of that, you know.
Can I butt in, because you've jogged a memory of something else I've been playing recently?
Oh, please.
I have actually been playing Devil May Cry 3 on the HD collection, which is a game I bounced off when I was younger, because the original edition of the game that I had is, if you die, you would just go back to the beginning of the mission that you're on, completely lose all your progress, which is rough in a game like that. In the special edition, you can change it to, only go back to a checkpoint, which is nice. But then you get, basically, I get to the first boss, which is Cerberus, and it's just a notoriously hard first boss in the game.
Hmm.
But now, for some reason, I've been cruising through it quite gleefully. I've been getting to bosses that are supposed to be really difficult and doing them in one shot and wondering if I'm good at it, which is a bit wild, because I'm not very good at these kind of fast action games. But it's really good. It's just an excellent game that deserves all of the acclaim it got, I think. I'm only about 10 missions in, which is about halfway through, I think. But it really is brilliant. It holds up really well. The Resident Evil-style camera angle changes are just a thing I wish more games would do. I know that the whole Mega 3D environment that's fully like maneuverable with the analog stick is appealing. But having design that means the use of the camera to obscure things from the player when they can't move the camera is some kind of underrated, I think. It's a very old school thing.
Right,
to
yeah.
I mean, like that. Yeah, like I did a mission recently where you have to jump up into the rafters to get a blue orb to get your health up again, and a health up thing. Sorry, excuse me. And the fact that it's that you can even get into the rafters requires you to just be an idiot and jump into the rafters. Like, there's no indication there's anything up there. And then once you're up there, it's really hard to land on them because of the way the camera works. It requires you to jump into the screen across a camera transition and then land on a very small platform in a game which has very awkward jumping controls. And the thing is, back then, that was fine. That was actually, like, the fact that it was kind of hard because of the camera, because of the controls, that was part of the design. It wasn't like, oh, they put this thing in by accident, this is bad design, which is what people would probably say nowadays. But back then it was about a bad design on purpose, which I kind of love. Like, I'm a big fan of stuff like that. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
I hear you, Stu. Yeah. I absolutely hear you. I'm now thinking, between my experience of DMC and last year, when I wrote about the first Devil May Cry, I also played that one for a little bit. It's like I've played very little Devil May Cry, but so far all the Devil May Cry I have played, I have enjoyed, which tells me I should play more Devil May Cry.
How far did you get to the funniest cutscene in the world in DMC? Did you get to the succubus?
No. I saw that clip on Twitter, but no, I didn't get that far.
The line, no. Oh my god, when she says, she's just like, "Who are you?" And Dante says, "I'm your prom date. You sack of shit," and it's like the funniest thing ever to me. It's just so obnoxious, and it's the use of like "you sack of shit" is just unbelievably funny. Oh god, that game is so bad and yet so good. I love it.
I'm gonna go back to that. I'm gonna finish it, but I want to go back to it and give really all DMC more attention, because a couple years ago on Netflix, I saw a DMC anime. I don't know how many episodes there were, but it was a full animated series, like season, and I'm pretty sure it was by Madhouse, a studio I really enjoy.
Yeah, they did like Boondocks, didn't they? I think
they might have. Yeah. They've done a lot of stuff over the years. And I just remember I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah.
And when I watched at that point, I had not played any of the games, so I was like, I know who Dante is, but let's check out this show. And I really enjoyed the show. It was very funny, and it had really good action, and it had really absurd sort of moments. Like, I think at one point Dante's like riding a motorcycle across a bridge, and he like uses his guns to destroy the bridge that he's driving on.
Yeah, it sounds like a Devil May Cry to me.
Yeah, it was really good. So if you haven't seen that one, I would say
if
you haven't seen Devil May Cry anime, I want to say the date was like maybe 07, 08, like early aughts. Go look that up. I really had a good time watching that one, and I don't really know much about Dante, so.
Yeah, I might check that out. I want a big sort of kick for the series, so once I've done 3, I'm probably going to try and actually finish 2, which is a really poor game.
I've read a lot of the reputation about that,
but
one.
I've never finished it, so I feel like I kind of have to finish it. You know, so I finished 1 and I finished 3. I kind of feel like I need to do 2.
Let's move on to our monthly topic, which is January 2023, the month we're in right now. I hope it's going great for everybody. My month so far has been busy, but, you know, productive, which I guess those two words are similar.
My month's kind of sucked, but I've had plenty to do, so that's nice.
And we've had a lot of fun episodes out already, and we've had a lot of fun comments. So I want to go back. I want to share some of those comments that you shared with us. I want to share them back with you. We're going to Ouroboros this thing.
Oh, hell yeah.
Starting with our Donkey Kong Country episode, number 504. Stu, you and I were both on that one.
Yes, we were. Yeah, that was a fun episode with Bob and Henry.
Right off the bat, we have a comment from Clayton McAvoy, who I guess must be the lost McAvoy brother.
Oh, wow.
He said, "Henry, stop being mean to Stu. Now, Stu, Henry's not here. He can't hear this. He can't hurt you. Is Henry too mean to you?"
I don't get that vibe. I've seen a couple of people say that, and I've never felt like Henry was being mean to me. like ever.
No,
I think Harry and I are good. I think we're cool. Like I really don't get that vibe from him at all. Sometimes he's mean about old British games, but I always took it in the jokey kind of tone that I thought it was. You know,
I think so.
I like defending games like that is kind of my purpose in life, but I don't take it. What I don't like is when, you know, when people online are just like, this is like objectively bad design because of this, this and this. When the sort of American influence that has come to kind of completely control retro gaming, in my opinion, is it like a malignance? And I really don't like that because with respect to all those great games like NES games and SNES games and all that stuff, there's a lot of history there that's just kind of ignored. And that does bother me a little bit. But, you know, Henry saying like, Gex is shit, that doesn't bother me at all, you know, or whatever he says. See, I've never got that vibe, but I've heard a couple of people say that, so maybe that's a type of meanness that's just not on my radar, because I just do not feel like that's mean at all.
Maybe it's just the vibe, because it's a podcast and people are listening to it, like, as a third party, but it's like, if you've ever spoken to Henry, I don't think I've ever, like, seen Henry actually mad or, like, mean to anyone, so it's like, whatever he says on the show, I'm pretty sure is he just having fun on the show. I don't think he's actively angry at anyone.
If there is a beef, and that, like, you know, I mean this in a respectful way, I think that I could fight Henry. I think that might be fun. Like, just like, you know, squash the beef, get in a little disused car park, light a bin on fire, and you know, get fighting. I think that's the way forward.
We'll have to add that to the Patreon.
$1 million Stuart and Henry have a topless knife fight in a car park lit by a burning bin.
I want to share also a comment from Craig, which is just Craig. And he said, I had to go and check, and it is possible 100% Donkey Kong Country in under an hour. The record is 44 minutes, 48 seconds, according to speedrun.com. So it's good to know that Cranky was not just, you know, yanking our crank. You actually can beat that game completely. Yeah. Find every secret and do it in less than an hour, which is what Cranky says he did.
It doesn't sound like it would be very fun, but yeah, you could probably do that. The worst part of that was to get 100%, you have to actually win the bonuses, I think. So doing those would be so tedious on a speedrun. All those things we have to match three. Yeah, some of them. Like, but the ones that are like match three or spell out a word, I think to get the credit, you have to beat them. I might be wrong about that. I might be wrong about that.
I'm pretty sure once you enter a secret room, you've got the secret.
Okay.
Because when I've watched I think I did watch a speedrun of this not that long ago, and I believe for the speedrun purposes, they would just, as soon as they'd run into a room, if there was a pit, they'd jump in the pit. If there was a game, they would just jump immediately and hit the first box, like, and just clear it right away. Unless you had to clear the room or do something specific in that room.
I could be completely wrong. Yeah, like, the only exception, I guess, would be the one in, I think it's Oil Drum Alley, where you have the secret in the secret.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Nessic one. Exception. I think you have to beat the, you know, clear the secret to get to another secret.
There's a great example of that in Donkey Kong 64, actually.
Oh!
There's a Diddy Kong minigame that you have to fail in order to get the consolation prize, which is 10 bananas. And the only way to get those 10 bananas is to fail that, so no one would ever figure that out because the game is so easy. Like, the minigame is so simple that failing it is just like, you'd probably have to try. So that's a fun little example of a completely mean secret placement, I guess, there. Just another Donkey Kong 64 reference for this crack of a podcast, I reckon.
Yeah, that's a fun little homage, maybe.
It's been interesting playing Donkey Kong Country for that podcast, then playing 64, because the connections are really much more, like, intimate than I remembered them being. Like, there's a lot of Donkey Kong Country stuff in Donkey Kong 64, because it is essentially Donkey Kong Country 4.
How many years apart are they? Because DKC was 94.
Yeah, but DKC 3 was 96, 7, I want to say. So really not that much difference. It is essentially DKC 4, because they were contracted to make three more Donkey Kong games, and that's one of them. So there is a lineage there. It's just I often see them as kind of talked about as if they're kind of divorced from each other, but they're really not. I don't know why I've turned this into a Donkey Kong 64 podcast. It's just a very interesting game.
It's what you're playing, and so far it's been related to all the topics we've brought up.
Yeah, this is what this podcast is now. From now on, every month, Stu tries to make everything about Donkey Kong 64, no matter what. All roads lead to Donkey Kong 64.
Well, I also wanted to highlight from episode 506, which your episode about retro compilations.
Oh, yes.
We have this comment from just a fantastic username, by the way, Budweiser Tall Cans.
Yeah.
Presumably of the Appalachian Tall Cans. And they say, I joined my local pinball league last season. I've been playing for 5 years or so, and it's the first time I've ever really competed. I'm beyond hooked. Love the pinball talk every time y'all bring it up. See the y'all there. I think he might be from the American South there.
Oh, yeah, but everyone says that now, and it's really irritating.
It's gotten a lot of traction. You know what it is? Because our English language lacks a proper plural you, so y'all is a
that's not gendered. It's not substitute. Gendered in some way as well.
No, it's not.
So y'all is very useful. The problem is whenever I see British people say y'all, I just think, what are you doing? But I get it because it's easy to use and it's not rubbish like folks.
I try to use folks, but folks doesn't sound right, you know. I've been trying to use that as a gender free catch all term. So I guess what's the pinball scene right now for you? Do you have a lot of pinball access? Do you?
No, I don't think that I can think of anywhere where there's any proper pinball. I mean, I like video pinball. I like stuff like Demon's Tilt and.
Oh yeah, that game is great. If anyone out there listening to this has not at least tried Demon's Tilt, you should totally try it. Especially, again, this is Retronauts. If you get the Switch version and you get your Flip Grip. That game is just a perfect vertical game because you see the whole board. It's fantastic.
It's a really good game. Any pinball game, like the video pinball game, that takes advantage of the fact that it's not a mechanical pinball machine and has like bonus screens and like missions and things like that. I'm really into that. But there have been a lot of pinball games I've loved my whole life, like Crew Ball on the Mega Drive, or like Pinball Fantasies, Pinball Dreams, Pinball Illusions. I could go on, seriously. 3D Ultra Pinball. Pokemon Pinball, Metroid Pinball, especially the DS one, which I think that is the only one, actually, the DS Metroid Pinball. Sonic Pinball Party, great game. House of the Dead, Pinball of the Dead, that's really good. The GBA has a lot of pinball games that are really cool. The weird one, Super Mario Ball, that's a really fun game that no one's played. It's a Mario pinball game, which is like an adventure game. It's absolutely brilliant.
I know how you love the PlayStation in general and weird games sometimes. Are you familiar with Paranoia Escape?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
That is a
you have my attention,
Japanese-only first-person pinball action game.
Oh, what?
And its designer is not a game designer guy. He's actually like a special effects artist who was working in America a lot, and they came back and like... So he designed this game. His name is above the title, Screaming Mad George.
I've heard of this. I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, it's a wild... I bought a copy years ago. I still have a copy, but I've never actually played it, and I really want to give it a go, but it is just... It's a notoriously weird game that, like, you know, the kind of games that only really came out on, like, the PlayStation 1, where it's, like, someone who, I don't remember who published it, but, like, some company just published this game out of nowhere from a guy who doesn't really make video games, but, like, he had these ideas, and someone gave him the money to do it, and he did it.
And this is a PS1 game?
Yeah, PS1.
Wow. That has absolutely got my attention. I thought for a second you were going to talk about the Japan-only... pinball, I can't remember what it's called, like Fantastic Pinball or something. It's like a really cute, like, cartoony pinball game, and I wish I could remember what it was called. Pinball Fantastic. I'm looking this up. I'm just completely unprofessional. Okay. Completely unprofessional. Fantastic Pinball Kyutenkai.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant, and if you have a PS3, you can log in and get it right now. It's from Technosoft, and they made something else, and I can't remember what it is. they're more known for some other game, but it's actually a gorgeous, cartoony pinball game that I really recommend.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I actually, against all odds, because pinball is not big here in Japan, but against all odds, here in Osaka, we do have a dedicated pinball space.
That's really cool.
It's in Osaka City proper, so it's not like I can walk there, but if I'm in the city, I can go there pretty much whenever I want.
Yeah.
It's called Silver Ball Planet. They've got a fair amount of like room there, so they have a lot of machines that I think they sort of cycle through every month. They've got really old classic ones, but they also like get some new ones in there that are really fun and have like really big screens in them. So
I bet the new ones are amazing.
I love to go down there and just sort of see what's happening.
When I was younger and I did have access to pinball, I would play, the ones everyone talks about. Like I would play the Lethal Weapon table and I would play the Addams Family table and have an absolutely great time. The problem for me with actual real pinball, as fun as it is I prefer the gimmicks of the video pinball. Stuff like Kirby's Pinball Land and Super Mario Ball. One of my dream games was that Yoku's Island Express. It's a pinball adventure game. It's exactly what I want. And I barely touched it. I'm an idiot.
I'm sure I own that on some platform, but I haven't really given it much time either. I do want to check that out.
When I was a little kid, I drew and designed a pinball game called Pinball Man. 100 pages of pinball boards, each one different one with different gimmick on every single one. And I took it round to a fan of the family who I knew who made games. They made, like, Flash games.
Yeah.
And I gave him my 100-page design document. I was like, make my game. I was like a little kid. And he's like, yeah, okay. I never saw it again, and I would really do anything to get that back, to be honest. I'd love to see those.
Oh, no.
I would love to know. No, I gave it away, you know, that's what I did. But I would love to see that again, because, oh man, I put a lot of work into that one. Maybe someday Pinball Man will become real.
Never too late for pinball.
Man. It's never too late. No, but I am working on a game, so look forward to that.
To the next episode, which was Nadia's episode about LGBTQ representation in video games.
Yeah.
Just right off the bat, a lot of people asked me, why aren't you on this episode? And the short answer is, I wasn't invited. You know, I'm like a vampire. I can't just invite myself onto other people's podcasts. I definitely try to get myself out there and tell people, hey, I could do that. I could do that. Frankly, you know, even though I am queer and I have an interest in the topic, I don't know how much I would have to contribute to their, especially because it's their conversation and they're all friends. So like, I feel like it would have been a little weird for like three friends to be on the show with some other person in another country who none of them have met face to face. So I don't think I would have been a great guest for that particular show, but I would certainly love to, you know, maybe have another episode of a similar topic or explore a different angle, you know?
I think it's a topic that could support many, many episodes or even an entire separate podcast. Not that I'm suggesting we do that, but I think a podcast about, you know, LGBTQ in games could be very interesting and successful.
Exactly.
Obviously, I wouldn't. I'm not going to do it, obviously, because what have I got to contribute?
I wanted to highlight a comment from Drew Mackey about that. He said, this was a fun conversation to sit on. Based on the title, though, I want to suggest that this topic that is approached again, perhaps in ways that focuses on specific genres of games the way this one did. Fighting games, say, could be its own discussion easily. You could also do interesting things approaching LGBTQ representation by specific companies, Nintendo, Square, Capcom, that have their own strengths and weaknesses when it comes to queer rep. I may be suggesting a whole podcast, I realize, but I'd love it if this was a recurring thing.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I agree with that.
I hope we can keep doing this.
I agree with that 100%. I think that would be great. I think this is something that, you know, it deserves more than just one episode. Not that it wasn't a good episode, obviously, but I think that you could get really into that, like really deep into that with even individual games, you know.
Yeah, and I also wanted to highlight this one, and I have a selfish reason for this one, which I'll make clear in a second. We have a comment from, I think that's Sybil Arnett, who says, I definitely wonder, after the early comment on Celeste, how many trans women flirt with and barely reject stealing their names from JRPG characters, said as someone who decided to go as Shion as a middle name instead of her primary. A comment on the comment from Larch, who was on the episode, Larch said, I saw a tweet that was like, parents don't name your kids after fictional characters. If they transition, they'll do that themselves. And I'm like, I'm in this picture and I don't like it. To me, that is very funny because I absolutely contemplated naming my daughter Diamond. I absolutely contemplated that before we picked another name, which was absolutely a video game name. And then a few years after that, I was like, you know what? I'm Diamond. So I totally understand that concept. Even though I didn't take the name for a video game character, I gave that to my daughter. I absolutely had names in mind for my daughter that I just kept and held in my pocket until I used them for myself. So I understand that feeling.
I wonder if I should change my name to a video game name.
Are you dissatisfied with Stu or Jip?
My name is pretty good, but maybe I could change my first name to like Bubsy or something.
You got to go with a fave, or you got to go with the left field.
Tama Roving. That's the one. Tama.
The episode that just went up recently, and again, episode featuring you and me and Dave Vollmer, was our Sonic Frontiers episode.
Oh boy, yeah, that was an episode.
I just listened to that today. I had a great time listening to it. I think it's a very fun episode, by the way.
I listened back to it, and because I was worried that I came off as insane, and I think I came off as only slightly insane, which is good.
No. But on that note, we have a comment from Vanja, or maybe Vanya, if that's a soft J, who says, Gotta update that BIOS, Stu. Hello, I like every video game except Sonic Frontier.
See, I don't remember where I've got that as a bio. Like, is it the Retronauts site? Because I do not remember that. I think I used to use that when I did stuff in Nintendo Life, but I don't do that anymore, so I don't... I would... Oh, no, it's on Retronauts. There it is. Hello, I like every video game. Yeah, okay. I don't really like every video game. You got me. There are some that I think are bad. You absolutely got me there. Nailed to the wall.
But seriously, though, I had a good... That episode was very fun to record. Mm. It was fun to listen to. I think it's fine. I think we really did cover the game, a brand new video game, in a historical context, and gave not just me, you know, I'm not the only dummy who listens to the show. I'm sure some of our listeners are on my pages, same page as me with Sonic. They don't mm-hmm. know Sonic that well. I learned a lot. I think anyone listening to that show, unless they're a super, super hardcore Sonic fan, I think they're going to learn something. I really do.
They may learn that they despise me and want me to die. That's possible. But no, I thought it was okay. It was a much... For me, it was a bit weird because I was going... this sounds so dramatic, but I was going through a quite difficult period of fandom, if that makes sense. Like, I was really kind of, like, over it. And I almost felt like that episode was kind of like an exorcism, in a way, to let me get all my just hate out. Like, the like not hate, but just, like, the anger, in a way. It came out in a way that I think is quite productive, so I was quite pleased about that.
I know Dave definitely lived to let loose. There was a moment there where Dave got really loud, and it was, I think it was cathartic for him.
Yeah, it was emotional for everyone. I loved it.
I also wanted to highlight, it's funny, it'll be up by the time this episode goes live, but it's not up now. Number 511 is a mailbag, which kind of inspired, one reason inspired this, yeah, we're both on the mailbag episode. One of the reasons we have this episode going now is because I want to have more episodes where we respond to people's comments and letters and opinions. So
yeah.
I hope everyone enjoyed the mailbag episode, and I hope if you enjoy that one, you're enjoying this podcast right now. So that's a timey-wimey sort of conversation unto itself, but I hope everyone enjoyed that show that we already recorded and will be up soon, but isn't up today as of this speaking time.
I've gone cross-eyed.
Why don't we move on to columns, stuff we wrote in January. So I've covered a lot of stuff that I've been writing. How about you, Stu? I wrote down here. So you've got, your big thing this month has been your game. Where did this Game Gear directory come from? What sparked that?
Severe mental illness. No, I don't know. I just thought it would be fun. Like, that really genuinely is it, because nobody is covering the Game Gear properly. And I thought if I were to do a review of every Game Gear game, which is quite doable, there's not that many. I mean, there's a few hundred, but I'll get there in the end. There's no time limit. Then I would be able to sit there and say, I have got the most exhaustive coverage of the entire Game Gear library that's ever been produced. Like, this is now it. Like, this is now the resource. There's plenty of Game Gear writing out there, but nothing this... what I think is coming at it from a very positive and very much, like... a lot of games that other people would probably review very badly, I think I've given good scores to because they're right up my alley.
Mm.
And I think it's going to just be hopefully when it's done or even before then, people are going to look at it and they're going to go like, oh, I've never heard of that. That looks pretty good. Because in my experience, I expected this to be a lot harder. But in my experience, 9 out of the 10 games that I'll play are great, like great fun. It's a really underrated system, I think. Really underappreciated.
The one that went up just before we recorded this one was the first section of Bees.
Yes, when I did like 9 games, it was ridiculous. I'll never do one that long again.
I saw a game in there that I was unfamiliar with. I think was Babel Noto, the Tower of Babel. Like a bunch of penguins running around.
Oh, that's Berlin cute. Wall. Berlin Akabe. Berlin Wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tower of Babel. No,
Wall. The Tower of Babel and the Berlin Wall is ostensibly the same thing. Don't worry about it. Yeah, Bonano Kabe. Bonano Kabe kicks ass. That's like a 5-star game, I think. I absolutely loved that.
Yeah, I had not heard of it before.
Yeah, it's like cross between.
Maybe I heard a different name. I don't just. Yeah.
It's like a much faster paced Load Runner, which is the main problem I have with Load Runner, which is that it takes forever to do anything. And this game, Berlin Okabe, the Berlin Wall. Yeah, Load Runner plus Pengo, I guess, plus a little bit of Pac-Man and a little bit of Bubble because of the power-ups you can get and stuff. Yeah, that's, for me, that's a top 10 like Game Gear game, I think. And I mean, that may change as I go through, but I give it 5 stars. I absolutely love it. The other one I gave 5 stars was Baku Baku Animal, which is a brilliant game as well.
I don't know a lot of Game Gear games. I never owned one. I played one. I used one when it was contemporary, and I remember enjoying it at the time. But yes. I just also, it's like, well, I already have a Game Boy. I don't need another handheld right now. And at that point in my life, I couldn't just buy games willy-nilly. You know, if it had been a few years later, like, you know, a few years later, you had the Neo Geo Pocket. And it's like, at that point, I had disposable income, so I could just buy whatever I wanted. So I absolutely bought it immediately.
Mm.
But Game Gear didn't last long enough to get me at that time. So I look forward to reading more about Game Gear games that I would maybe like to play. I
didn't have one as a child. I borrowed one, I believe, at one point. I had a Master System, which had many similar games. But I have a Game Gear now because I bought one. I got one from a charity shop, actually, a thrift store, for quite cheap with the original box and everything. A load of games came with it. It was a really good deal. But then I sent it to Retro 6, which is a UK-based console modding like service. And they took, like, because the screen was a bit messy, the sound wasn't working very well. And they recapped it, replaced all of the caps, capacitors, and put a new screen on. Like an IPS kind of screen. So it's basically a Game Gear, but it looks great. That's something I've done with a couple. That when I had the disposable income to do this, that's what I did with a few of my systems. Like a Game Boy Color, put an IPS screen in it. Original Game Boy, I didn't want to mess with it too much, but I did send it off for like refurbishment, and it came back like new, and I was really happy about that. I just love handhelds. I've embraced them because the Game Boy is the like platonic ideal of simplicity for a game for me. Like that, I can always enjoy a Game Boy game because they're never going to be ridiculously complex because of how they're designed. If they are, then they've made a mistake, basically. and the Game Gear is similar. I'm coming across all these games I've never heard of before in my life. Even though I consider myself quite well read on video games because I'm obsessed with them, I'll come across something completely new, and it's just very, very exciting to find a game from the past, which is, you know, which is my time for games, I reckon. Hence being part of Retronauts. And I'll find a brand new retro game that is just brilliant. It becomes a new thing that I love, a new game that I want to play. And, you know, Berlin Okabe and Baku Baku Animal are that. Like, they are games that I will go back to because I had so much fun with them. And sometimes you'll get the surprise like that stupid Berenstain Bears game that turns out to be amazing. I couldn't believe that. I was like, oh, this will be shite. And then I go, oh no, I love it. it's really good.
That was definitely a shock. I did not know the Berenstain Bears had any video games, let alone Game Gear games.
Yeah, there's a Mega Drive version, which I now want to try as well. But I haven't yet.
16-bit Berenstain, wow.
With the Game Gear directory, listeners may want to know, I'm currently 2 entries ahead on that. I have, like, B-I to B-U and then, like, C-A. C-A is weird because there's only going to be 4 games in that because it's the way that it's split up. This is a very weird, awkward project. But I'm really loving it. Like, I'm really focusing on it. Although I really do need to also focus on getting book 2 written, so I probably shouldn't have started doing this project.
And you also had time this month to write about Spyro. What brought about the Spyro
stuff? Oh God, I genuinely don't know. I think I saw some people talking about it on. I think. Oh yes, I know that Kid Icarus, the YouTuber, did a video about Spyro, like covering the whole series, like a 2-hour video. And I watched some of it, and I was like, with respect to Kid Icarus, like, no, you're wrong, you're saying things that aren't true, and it's annoying me, and I hate it when you do this, don't do this. So I decided I would write about it myself and do a few pieces covering it and trying to be as earnest as possible. But as a result, I ended up playing Spyro 3 on the PS1, and I got quite into that, although I have now stopped playing. I may go back to it someday. But yeah, he's a good little boy, that little dragon. I do like him.
And you also reviewed 2 games.
I did.
Both of them retro-esque, I would say.
Yeah, I'm trying to do more sort of scored reviews on the website because I think they're fun to do, basically.
You went over River City Girls 2 and Vengeful Guardian Moonrider.
Yeah, yeah. River City Girls 2 is exactly the same as 1, except everything's better, so that's a great game. The original was great, and this one is, like, great squared. Like, they've changed up the pacing so that enemies aren't, like, complete sponges, you know, damage sponges.
Hmm.
They've changed that up. They've made you feel a lot more agile, a lot more capable without making it too easy. The story and the dialogue are more fun. It's a great game. I really do recommend it. It had a little hiccup when it released because, for some reason, it was in 30 frames per second. And I'm not a big frame rate guy, but in a game like this, where the original was 60, it is really jarring to go to 30. But yeah, they're patching it, apparently. On PC, it's already 60, but other systems, they're working on it. I have no idea how that happened. I remember because I was talking with WayForward a bit beforehand, because I was just sort of, like, they sent me the code for it, and I was playing it, and it was at 30, and I was like, I need to ask them what's going on with this, because I don't want to review this if this is, like, going to change, you know? I don't want to say, oh, this game runs not that well, if it's going to change. And there was this whole kind of like, yeah, they're aware of it, just waiting for a response, really. And then this thing came out after the game release saying, like, yeah, we know about the frame rate issue and we're fixing it. And I do wonder what happened behind the scenes there. I would love to know, like, how that came about, you know.
I mean, you know, video games are held together by, you know, hopes and dreams and duct tape. So I guess maybe they had a fix. Maybe the fix broke something else, and then the time was coming. It's like, okay, we got to get this out. We'll fix it. We'll fix it in post. You know.
The problem is, it's something I predicted, and I said to them, you know, in a polite, formal, informal sort of way. I just said, like when this comes out with this frame rate, people are going to they're going to react. Like, there's going to be a pushback. Because gamers, if there's one thing that they get mad about, it's everything, but especially frame rates. And it came out, and sure enough, I looked on, you know, Reset Era, the worst website on the planet, and they're like, yeah, I'm not buying this. If it's 30, I'm not buying it. And I was like, that sucks, because this game deserves to do well, and it's a real shame that that happened.
Well, it sounds like some people have enjoyed it, and I've definitely seen a lot of people playing it online, so I guess it's got an audience for sure.
Everyone who's played it likes it, I think, because it's hard not to. It's real good. Like, people who like what they call belt scrolling beat 'em ups like that.
Yeah.
We've been eating real good the last few years. Like, with that and Turtles Shredder's Revenge, you know, the Cowabunga Collection also last year, Streets of Rage 4, that was a few years ago now, but then the DLC came out quite recently and gave it a new lease of life. Yeah, there's a load more I haven't even mentioned, like Final Vendetta from Bitmap. I think that's what they call Bitmap something. We've been eating real good. Like, it's just been great.
For me personally, I did I covered a bunch of stuff in my columns. Because of the way the calendar worked out this year, I actually opened the year by wrapping up last year.
Yeah.
So that was my year review. Then it's funny, I wrote everything down. I even wrote on that column, okay, I'll be back in 2 weeks. And then a few days into the new year, somehow I missed this. Star Trek DS9 turned 30. And I was like, whoa. Oh, geez, I can't not write about DS9. So I had to come right back and do one on DS9. Then the next week was DMC. And then the next week was Resident Evil 2. So this month's been kind of a lot of bangers this month.
Yeah, for sure.
Because DS9 is a show I just adore. And Resident Evil 2, you know, we did a whole podcast. I'm very much a Resident Evil fan. And DMC is a game I didn't really know that well, but to write about it, I had a great time with it. So, yeah, just a lot of good stuff there.
I have never seen in my entire life an episode of Deep Space Nine. I've seen a fair... I have a weird relationship with Star Trek, which is that I kind of respect it from afar.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff I've seen of the original series, I really enjoy. I think it's hard not to enjoy the original series, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen some of this first season of The Next Generation, and I didn't really like it, and then everyone told me I should just skip ahead, and I don't really want to skip ahead, you know what I mean? Like, I want to see the good stuff, but at the same time, I feel like if I skip episodes, that's kind of cheating.
I understand both sides of the conversation, because, when that show started, it was kind of a mess, and then the second season came during a writer's strike, so, like, it was shortened, and they had even more problems.
Yeah.
And the third season is the first consistently good season. I mean, but there are plenty of good episodes in the first two seasons. There really are.
Yeah, I've enjoyed what I've seen. I just got a bit bored with it because the episodes are so long as well. Well, for my standards, they are anyway. I may go back to it. I liked what I saw of Strange New Worlds. The first episode of that was really good, I thought.
I've been meaning to watch. Everyone tells me that's the best Star Trek show in years, and unfortunately, it is not available in Japan at all.
That sucks.
My only option is to steal it, so I may just steal it.
I also like what I've seen of Lower Decks quite a lot. That's funny.
Yes, that show has been wonderful. That is, that funny enough, of all the things that is available here, that one is available here on Amazon Prime
for
some reason. And I watch, whenever it comes out, I watch it as quickly as possible because it's a great, it's a funny show, and it really goes hard in sort of throwing back to older Star Trek episodes, but not in an annoying way. I'm just kind of like, whoa, they remember that.
That's the thing. I don't get any of those references, and it's still funny to me. Like, it still works for me just as a storytelling. I think they're doing a great job of making it accessible. But then if you are a Trekkie or whatever, if you know the references, it's even more satisfying, which is great. That's the perfect, like, thing to have, really.
Yeah, well, I think season two had a whole storyline about the Pakleds, and it's like, the Pakleds are absolutely a alien race that appeared in Next Generation as kind of like just a completely one-off, really weird group of aliens. And like you never saw them again. You heard about them a couple times, but you never saw them again. So to have for Lower Decks to build a whole thing around the Pakleds and show the Pakled homeworld and have like a Pakled conspiracy, like I just thought that was hilarious.
I watched most of the first season. I will continue it. I'm a bit slow to watch things though, so that's why I haven't carried on, but I will get there because I do like it a lot.
Well, I can tell you right now, two highlights of the second season that really can't miss them. Measure of a Man is a great drama episode.
Yeah.
And Q Who is both the return of Q for the first time in a while, and he introduces them to the Borg. That's the first episode of the Borg in it, and that's also a very it's a very creepy episode too.
Cool.
Because the Borg would not come back for another, I think over like a year and a half later. They took their time.
I will get back to it. I do want to see it. It's just a timing thing, really.
But in the case of Deep Space Nine, I really do think the first episode, it's a long episode because it's introducing a lot of stuff. But if you watch the episode and it intrigues you at all, you should just keep watching. And if it doesn't, then just don't bother. But I think unlike Next Generation, which started off very shaky, Deep Space Nine starts off very strong. It lays down a lot of stuff. And it's fun. So I can recommend that show.
Deep Space Nine is a bit more, not sitcomish, but it's a bit more down to earth, right? In terms of plot lines, it's more personal. It's more like intimate. Am I wrong about that?
Well, it's kind of like, it's like a workplace show, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's not like on the bridge, laser, like phases to like kill or whatever. I don't know how. It's not like about the captain. Like, it's more about the people. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean the captain's obviously a very important character, but they build because they have the station, because basically almost everyone who shows up will just probably come back. So they build up a gigantic cast of, you know, semi-recurring, often recurring, and it's funny.
That does sound fun.
Some of the characters last year, Louise Fletcher passed away, who's a very famous actor, and she played this wonderful sinister character on Deep Space Nine. And in all her obituaries, they mentioned, like, you know, she was only in, like, I want to say, like, 10 or 12 episodes of a show that ran for, like, 7 years. But she is one of the most memorable characters that entire show. And that's both how good she is, how good her character was, and how well the show was written. Like, her character loomed over the action for a very long time, even though she really didn't have that many appearances.
Can I out myself as slightly cretinous, please?
What?
I kind of like the Abrams movies, Star Trek, Into Darkness and Beyond. Mostly the first one and the third one.
Yeah, no, I watched all of them in theaters. I had a good time watching them.
I think the first one is really good. I really like it a lot.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed all of them. I think all of them have, I think, weaknesses that show up more on rewatching. So I'm due to rewatch them. I was rewatching the original movies last year, and I watched all the way up to Nemesis, which, honestly, I enjoyed more this time than previous time, even though I still think it's not great. So the next movies I want to rewatch will be those, the trio, the so-called Kelvin trilogy.
The only other Star Trek movie I've seen is Wrath of Khan, which I watched a few years ago for the first time, and was really taken aback by how good it was.
Oh, love it. I did that on the column about that one last year because it turned 40. I associate
the original series with kind of camp comedy almost in a way, in a kind of naivety, and that's hard hitting. Like, it's the same characters, but it's like the what you call, air quotes, darker and edgier, but it actually works. It's really, really impressive film and really well like shot, and I really enjoyed it. I had a great time watching it. I'd like to see more, actually.
In my opinion, that's kind of the best Star Trek movie there is, like, flat out. But it's a great movie. I think it's a great movie all around, and I think it certainly helps to watch it with the context, but I feel like even if you don't know those characters that well, I feel like it's a great introduction to those characters. It's a great setup, and just the movie itself delivers, you know, ideas in the very first act, and they all come back, and I think it's a wonderful film. And
yeah,
I saw it. I know I saw it when I was a kid, and somehow, even as a kid, I was like, whoa. And just every few years I would watch again. I'm like, no, this is great. This is great. And now I'm middle-aged, you know, maybe even past middle-age, and I'm still like, this is great. So I'm positive that movie's great.
Hell yeah.
Let's go back to video games a little bit, because I want to talk. It is, even though it's January, you know, we don't. It's funny how video games have evolved. We don't really have dead months anymore.
No,
every month is a great gut month for video games. And this month already, we've had a lot of retro or retro adjacent news that I wanted to bring up. Breakers Collection came out. That is a pair of Neo Geo games that, honestly, I know them by name, but not actually context. But I as soon as those games landed, a lot of my Neo Geo YouTube channels went crazy. Breakers. So that's apparently done very well.
I have got that, and I'm going to write about it.
Oh,
cool. But I haven't tried it yet. I haven't had time, which I feel a bit guilty about. I'm going to give it a go, but I'm not actually the most knowledgeable fighting game person, so I don't want to misrepresent the game. That's a big problem I have with writing about fighting games, is I don't really understand the technical aspects of them. I love them,
but I'm not that great at them.
Also, with respect to Cube Byte, their previous retro releases, while welcome, haven't been exactly up to par in terms of performance. So I'm a little bit worried. But the thing is, people seem to be responding quite positively to it. It seems like they've put a lot more of their backs into it than they have their previous releases. But, you know, I'm not going to knock them because of Cube Byte, I've got Radical Rex and First Samurai on my Switch, so I can't, you know, I can't complain. But, I hope it's good, Breakers Collection. There's been some other good collections out this month, but I guess we'll get to them.
Very recent release was Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden. Mm. They're on a bunch of platforms, and they're also on Game Pass.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to check out both of those games for a while. I bought Persona 4 Golden for Vita, so I have it sitting right within arm's reach. I could play that game. But one thing always stopped me, and maybe, I don't know if you'll appreciate this or not, but as someone who speaks Japanese,
yes,
if you play Persona 4 Golden in English, the actors are it's a game set in Japan, Japanese characters.
Yeah.
The English voice actors so mangle the Japanese words they have to say, like, to just like have names and places they say that they're so mangled. I can't do it. it is distracting, you know? It's like, imagine if a French studio made a game about Americans, and every character, even though they were speaking French, they would introduce themselves with English names, and they would like mispronounce every single name. And just like, what are you doing? Like,
start Gip.
Yeah, it broke me.
Well,
so I know
is it not possible to play it with Japanese voice and English text, or vice versa, or something like that, or just in Japanese?
These newer versions, yes. The Vita version does not let you do that.
Oh, I see. That's okay. That explains why. Because I was going to say, why wouldn't you just change it? Yeah.
The Vita version, if you buy the English version, which I did, you have to play it in English. You don't get the Japanese option. But these newer versions, they let you. So I'm gonna try these games again with Japanese actors, and I'm gonna see if I can get past that hill.
I have Persona 4 Golden on Steam, and I have started it, but I have the same problem I always run into, which is those games take hours and hours to get going.
Yeah,
and I'm not big into stuff like that. The only other game like that that I actually got really into was the Danganronpa series. Mm-hmm. And they're not the same, because that's a visual novel, really, and this is a RPG. But the amount of talking is quite similar. And in Danganronpa, it's so much more immediately kind of disgusting and wrong that it really did appeal to me in that kind of like gross lizard brain way. But this is more just kind of like, okay, now you're going to school, now you're walking home from school, now you're going to have dinner, now you're going to go to sleep, now you're going to go to school, and it's kind of like, eh. But I'd like to carry on, because I know it's supposed to be one of the best games, like, in general. So I will carry on with it at some point.
I want to highlight two more games on here that I have been playing them this week, and I got a little taste for them.
Yeah.
One of them is Colossal Cave, which is that a...
Colossal Cave Adventure, the really, really old text-based game. Is that a remake of that?
It is a brand new interpretation of that game.
Right, right.
Which means it's kind of like Real Mist in that you, instead of doing any turn-based or grid-based stuff, you have a full 3D map you can explore.
Right.
But it is still the old game in that you have to, you have limited inventory. You can sort of click on things and interact with them if you have the right thing. If you walk into a room and just click the look button, you don't, more than looking at one thing, the game sort of describes the room to you, like you can't see it, but it's 3D, so you can see everything you want. It's got a really weird feel to it because it is such an old game, but it's a new, like, spin on it. It has a very strange feel to it, but I got into it. I got pretty far into the cave. I found some treasure, and then I had to sort of escape with the treasure because it's funny. It is so old. It's kind of older than the quote unquote old point and click adventure games that we kind of talk about, like the LucasArts games from the 90s.
Mm.
This is from the 70s, so it's like at that point, the genre was basically, they were making up the rules as they went along, so it's very score-based, which is kind of strange. Like, if you find treasure, you get some points, but if you take the treasure out of the cave and put it in your cabin, you get more points. And if you quit and save, like, it gives you your score and tells you, it kind of treats like the game is over. But like, no, I saved, I want to go back. So, it's not a roguelike, I'm going to try it again.
It's Roberta Williams.
Yes.
Writing it up. So I guess it's closer to those Sierra games than it is to LucasArts with her involved. It's not one of her games. It was someone else wrote Colossal Cave Adventure, not Roberta Williams. I think it was the game that inspired her to write like her original games. So there is a sense of lineage there, which I appreciate. Plus, anything with Roberta Williams I should support, really.
I do hope, if this works out for them, I hope they just do more stuff like this. Because like, if she made, like, a new version of, like, Mystery House or Dare I Dream Phantasmagoria, I think that would be very...
Oh, my God, a new version of Phantasmagoria would be astonishing. Although, can you really improve on Phantasmagoria?
I mean, it's a truly disgusting game. I hope someone, I don't know, IP rights or whatever, I just feel like... There's only two Phantasmagoria games, and they're still talked about. The second game's reputation only grows every year, so I feel like those games deserve some kind of either re-release or sequel or reboot, or they deserve some more attention is what I'm saying.
I know what I would do if it was me with Sierra's back catalogue, and I don't want to drag this on, but King's Quest... I would put 1 through 7 in one collection. Let Digital Eclipse do it, maybe. And what I would do is I would have the games as they are with optional mode that basically just tells you what to do. Like at all times, you could have a thing that would just say, now go to this place, go to this place. And also I would have it so that the game would automatically make flags, save points, invisibly, in places where you could screw yourself over. So when you get to the point where you are screwed over, the game could optionally just say to you, you needed this, so go back and get this before this. Like, you'd still lose the progress, but you'd know what you were doing. I think that would help people maybe come to appreciate those games for what they are, which is, yeah, they're very flawed, but they're of their time, you know? Plus, King's Quest, like, 6 is just a great game in general, and everyone should play it.
You know, since you mentioned it, I do want to highlight two features that caught my attention in Colossal Cave. Mm. First of all, auto mapping is just, of course, please. Yeah. Which you can turn it off. It gives you a choice of turning it off, but by default, it's on.
Yeah.
And the other neat thing is, like, there is a hint system in that if you're fumbling with a puzzle too much, there's an option. It's like, hey, if you want a hint, I'll tell you a hint, but it'll cost you some points because it's all score-based. But it's very much opt-in. It's like, would you like a hint? I'll give you a hint if you want to spend some points on it, which I thought was good.
Yeah.
I didn't take any hints, but I like the offer.
There's the social. I think the social aspect of those games is underappreciated. If you get to a certain point in the game and then you die to something very silly, then of course the next day you're going to be saying like, oh man, I got all the way to this bit and then I got killed by like a budgie. and people are going to laugh. So that's the social aspect of that, I suppose. It's not just bad, like what you'd call, air quotes, bad design. I mean, LucasArts kind of codified what adventure games would be like for the rest of eternity, which is frictionless games where you can't die and they're not, and full of jokes that aren't funny. But sorry, I'm just that they're not. That shit's not funny. Sam and Max is kind of funny, maybe.
I like Sam and Max.
But like, something like Monkey Island is like, I don't know, man. If you think Monkey Island is funny, then I don't know. I've got those jokes ain't funny, my friend. Yeah, I'm being controversial. Sorry.
It's all right. I'm going to move on to the next game that I wanted to highlight because it's a fan game, and I've put about an hour or so into this already. Castlevania Chronicles 2. Simon's Quest, and it's very interesting, came out of nowhere, at least for me.
Mm.
It's essentially a fan remake of Castlevania 2.
Yeah.
And they've done up the graphics using a lot of sprites from the later Castlevania games. They've redone all the music. It's all very metal.
Yeah.
But they've also added tunes from other Castlevania games, so it's not just like the same two songs you hear over and over. They've expanded the soundtrack basically by using more remixes.
Yeah.
They've adjusted a lot of things that would definitely be annoying. Like they've rewritten all the villager dialogue. So if you've talked to a villager, they will actually say something that means something and not just random nonsense.
Yeah.
There's a map. There's an in-game map. They've adjusted there's really not an inventory anymore. Like you can just sort of quickly swap between weapons that are in that you've gotten. Hearts are not the currency anymore. You get money when you kill enemies. But they've also changed a lot of stuff. So it's kind of a weird like. I called it a remix on Twitter, and I think it's the best term for it because like they've changed a lot.
Mm.
They've changed a lot of things. Like the day night cycle is gone. There's no more day night cycle.
Yeah.
The graphics to me are very strange looking because it is such a mismatch of great pixel art and just sort of like these giant background tiles that don't look like they're from the right game anymore.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like every stage so far that I played on, like the environments are just a little too big.
I mean, I've only seen the trailer, and to be honest, the trailer sort of seems to highlight a lot of areas that look just like straight lines. I'm not sure if that's what you were... I haven't really played much of Castlevania 2 because it's so obtuse.
Well, this is very much more playable than that one, for sure. But it's definitely... They made a lot of changes, but so far I haven't found any changes that, like, outrage me or make me feel like, oh, this is wasting my time, because I'm having fun with it. Like, I've cleared the first mansion. Oh, that's right. That's a big change. They put actual bosses in it, you know, like, because Castlevania 2, famously, there's really only two bosses, and you don't have to fight them, you can walk past them.
Yeah.
In this game, they put the mansions, every mansion is a boss, and you have to fight the mansion boss to get the Dracula piece out of the mansion. So, I cleared the first mansion, and, so far, I'm definitely enjoying it, and I think not every change is for the best, frankly, but as a fan game, I think it's definitely, you can see the heart. You can see the effort, so I definitely respect that. It's no AM2R.
Oh, another Metroid 2 remake, yeah.
It's nothing on that scale. Like that, like there's not a lot of original artwork here. It's a lot of just borrowed stuff, but
yeah.
Definitely the effort is there. I really appreciate the effort.
I have got it downloaded, so I'll give it a go.
And as far as news go this month, the only thing I really wrote down was ADGQ this month. I thought it was pretty good. Did you watch any ADGQ?
I didn't. It's not really my scene. No. I slightly... Okay, this is going to make people hate me. I see videos of speedrunners who are just getting, like, real angry. Like, big compilations. Like, this happens a lot. And I just kind of get, like... Don't capture yourself on video having like a breakdown over Sonic. Like, there's just really no need for that. But then again, I capture myself on audio having a breakdown over Sonic. So what? No, a speedrunner's cool. I don't love it. I'm just not that interested in the scene. You know, I have some friends who do it, and you know, good for them. But it all feels like you're just you know, you're just working too hard. Just chill out. Just play some games for fun, you know.
Well, I tried to highlight a few of the recaps on the Retro Twitter feed. So anyone out there, if you want to go back and check those out, I would say, you know, anything I highlighted, I think is pretty good. Enjoying a speedrun depends a lot on being aware of the game itself and enjoying the game. So that everyone's mileage will vary. But I think I saw some pretty interesting games. So I had fun with that.
I've seen really good ones. Like, don't get me wrong. They can be good. I think there's a lot of cringe in there, but they can be good, I think.
Well, Stu, you said the code word, cringe, so we should definitely wrap this thing up. Yeah. But before I go, I do want to pose a question for our listeners, and ideally, I guess we'll take your answers into consideration and maybe share them on our next podcast at the end of February. But I have a question I posted on the Retronauts Twitter, and it got a lot of responses, I must say.
Yeah.
By all means, if you have something to share about this, please make a comment on our Patreon post, and that way we can see it very easily when we round this up next month. So my question for you is, what's a video game, ideally an old video game, this is Retronauts, that you've started lots of times, you know, maybe like 7 or more times. You've started it, you tried to play it, and you just stopped. You didn't finish it, you just put it down, but you came back. And then you put it down again, and you came back, and you put it down, but you keep starting it, but you never get anywhere. Tell me a story about those games. So far on Twitter, most of the responses have been various Final Fantasies, Chrono Trigger, a lot of people said Chrono Trigger, and Skyrim, which I get Skyrim because Skyrim is a huge game, so I understand that one. But I've really noticed a pattern with a lot of RPGs on there, which I get it. Those games are long. You start them, you end up in a village somewhere, you don't know where you are, then you try to play again like 3 months later, you're like, oh man, where am I? What am I? Do I need to find a crown? What am I doing? So I get it. Do you have any, Stu, like that?
Bayonetta is my most recent one. I keep bouncing off that, but I think I finally got it now, so I think I will make it through eventually.
I've definitely started that one more than once.
Breath of the Wild could be one of them, because I cannot grok that weapon breaking thing. I hate it. It drives me crazy, and every time I boot it up, I'm like, this is the time when it'll finally click and I'll like it, and it never happens, and I really wish it would, because I like everything else about the game.
My answer on Twitter was Metal Gear Solid, and I really feel like it's important because I do... that game's going to turn 25 this year, and I really want to play it before I write about it for This Week in Retro. So yeah. I do really want to give that game an honest... Because, again, it's the kind of thing where I keep starting it. I watch the entire cutscene. I'm in the snow. I'm like, man, this game looks great, and wow, this sounds great. This is so exciting. And then I put it down, and then like 6 months pass, and I'm like, oh, shit, what was that game about? Where was I? Oh, geez. I want to give it a try. I really loved, a couple years ago, a parody of it called Never Stop Sneaking. I really enjoyed that game, so I really want to try the real game now. Breaking news. During this recording, GoldenEye 007 coming this week.
Whoa.
So by the time this episode goes up, GoldenEye 007 will be available on Switch Online and Game Pass.
Awesome. I think everyone who has Rare Replay is getting it as well.
That's right. It will be on Rare Replay as well. So if you're listening to this and you missed that news and you haven't already downloaded it, go enjoy some GoldenEye 007. I don't want to cachet. Obviously, I love that game. I wrote about it. I love the game. I feel like we're going to have a massive surprise. Oh, this has an age well moment, but...
Yeah, I was about to say, we're about to get an memorable... Absolute, yeah.
It's memorable. It's an exceptional game. It certainly has elements that will still be fun.
I think we're going to get a spate of this was never good soon. Like, it's going to happen. GoldenEye, I think it holds up because the mission-based structure is still quite unique. Like, you really don't get that anymore in the same way. Like, the way it is possible to just completely fail and then still sort of finish the mission, and then that doesn't really happen anymore. So it's a very interesting game still. The multiplayer is still fun, whatever anyone says. And, you know, unlocking the cheats is fun if nightmarishly hard. So, no, I think it's a great game. And playing it with a proper, not proper, but like a modern controller. Because it was fine on the N64 controller. I just mean playing it with a modern controller is going to solve a lot of the issues people have with it, I think.
I look forward to it. I'm definitely going to give it another go. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely give it a go.
I'm the weirdo who played through... I had a little project on my PS3, and I played through like Quantum of Solace, 007 Legends, and Bloodstone. I tried to do the GoldenEye Reloaded, but it's so crap that I just had to stop. Unfortunately, it's an awful game. Bloodstone's pretty good, James Bond Bloodstone, pretty good game. Quantum of Solace, pretty good game. It's essentially Call of Duty, except you're James Bond. It's really fun.
That might have an appeal. I'm thinking about that. That's exciting. Let's wrap this up. Our target was an hour, and it's been an hour. So yeah, I think I had a good time recording this. How about you, Stu? How you feeling?
It's good? Fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah, it's good. I hope the listeners enjoyed it, too.
I hope so. Please, by all means, please tell us. Tell us if this show works for you. Tell us if you think the show is missing a crucial corner. Like, do you need me to talk about the Japanese food I've been eating? You know, do you want to hear about my trip to Okinawa? Is that interesting? Or should we just stick to the news? The plan is to do this at the end of each month. So we'll wrap up our month and just talk about Retronaut stuff, retro news, retro releases, what's going on, and indeed, what have we been playing? And that's how I view this program going forward. I hope we continue. But that's it.
Hooray.
Stu, any last words?
I like video games. I think they're good.
I must disagree. Good night!